Hello and welcome back to Instant Mom. So this may be my most controversial episode yet. We will see. Maybe I'm just a little nervous. That I feel like whenever we talk about foster care and adoption influencers, we always kind of get into hot water and people tend to be really defensive about this topic. Probably because most of us are guilty of committing one of these influencer sins, as I'll call them, that I'll talk about here in a minute. So I just want us all to start by taking a deep breath before we launch into this one, myself included. So let's do it all together right now. Okay. This episode is not intended to be mean-spirited, to make anyone embarrassed or ashamed. It's not meant to cancel anyone. It really is an opportunity for everyone listening, including myself, to think and to really reflect deeply on how we might be, even unconsciously, doing more harm than good when we're quote-unquote influencing in this space. And I also want to come right out and acknowledge that I have gotten this wrong a lot when I first started out. I have looked back at some old posts when I started out 7 years ago and I have cringed so hard, and I've deleted many of them because with what I know and believe now, but didn't know or believe back then, I realized that a lot of my content was harmful or tone deaf or otherwise damaging. I didn't know any better then, but I do know better now. And now that I know better, I try to do better. The key word here is try, because I'm sure I will probably still make a misstep in the future as I continue to learn even more and as society's views and opinions and knowledge about foster care and adoption continue to evolve. So I just want to come out and say, like, I am not innocent here. So it's okay. It's a safe space where we can all talk about these things because, as I mentioned earlier, we are probably all guilty of these. And on that note, I want to urge you to lean into any defensiveness that you might feel when you listen to this episode. I have personally found that if my immediate reaction to anything is, well, not me, or well, not always, or some other kind of defensiveness, then that means that the narrative has probably struck a nerve with me and I need to do some reflecting. Rarely are our knee-jerk reactions totally accurate. So if you're one of those people who, as you're listening to this, like you're getting riled up, you're getting defensive, I would just sincerely ask you to just really stop and reflect on it and think if maybe that defensiveness is because part of you realizes that maybe, like me, you kind of misstepped before and maybe have unintentionally, unconsciously contributed to some of these harmful influencer style pieces of content that we've seen floating around there. And finally, before I get into this, I want to say that I try to give everyone the benefit of the doubt. You know, I believe that a vast majority of foster care and adoption influencers who get it wrong think they're coming from a good place and they really do care and they are trying to just to raise awareness about foster care and adoption in general. There are a few exceptions of people who I think are absolutely intentionally, consciously being exploitative, but I try to extend that grace whenever possible because I've been there, right? And also just to clarification, when I talk about influencers in this space, your mind might immediately go to people with like a huge following. But I really am referring to anyone who might be publicly or even, I guess, privately, but have like a large private following, might be talking about foster care and adoption and their foster care and adoption experiences on social media. So, you know, even if you've got a following of 500, I would still technically classify you in this influencer space. All right, guys, so here we go. being an influencer in the foster care and adoption space can be a really great thing. It can be used for good. I know there are so many misconceptions about foster care and foster parenting that we're all in it for the money, which, you know, we all know is hilarious because, you know, most of us go into debt taking care of these children. I think I probably have done an episode about the misconceptions of foster care and foster parenting. So influencing in this space can be massively educational. It can create change. It can amplify voices that might not always be heard. It can inspire others to be a foster parent or to be involved in the system somehow, or just be more aware. And this is all wonderful. I am all for content, like 2000%, that exists for these truly educational purposes. That is great. We absolutely need more awareness of the realities of foster care, like the good, the bad, and the ugly. And, you know, Lord knows we need a lot of change in the space. So that is great. I just want to like kind of set aside the purely educational content that's out there. But it's so easy for this influencing to wander from educational into vanity-driven entertainment, into saviorism, exploitation. So we're going to dig into all of those. And I've got a couple of rules that I think all of us should follow when we are creating or posting content about foster care and adoption. So rule number one, we should never, ever profit off the backs of the children in foster care and their stories, period. That probably seems really obvious, but I see this all the time. I have seen foster children on the cover of a foster parent's book. Now, granted, they were wearing sunglasses and hats in an attempt to like disguise them and, you know, protect their identity. But the fact is, you're still using someone else's child to sell your book. So that's a no-no. They, you know, foster children and their stories should not be used to sell your books or your keynote session at your conference or your MLM business. I am looking at you, essential oil people. I won't fight with you now about MLMs in general. You know, if you've got one, like, you know, do your thing, but don't use your foster kids to sell it. They should not be on a promoted piece of content. So I say this so often that there's a promoted post from someone in the foster care space and it's a picture of their kids in foster care or a caption about their kid's story. And it's like, you can't do that. It's like, it's just so unethical and icky. They should not be part of a sponsorship campaign or an ad campaign. And there is no wiggle room on this one, period. I don't care if you know, you're only showing their toes. I don't care if their faces are fully covered. Like it's just, oh, can you imagine? Like, can you just imagine for a minute that you are the biological mother and, you know, you've got all kinds of issues and struggles you're trying to overcome and you're at your absolute rock bottom of the rock bottom and your children have been taken from you and you're scrolling through social media and you see your child on the cover of some stranger's book and they're using their story to profit. Like, can you imagine how enraged you would feel? And if you don't feel sympathy for the parent, like imagine when that child grows up and they get older and they're able to understand their experience in foster care. Like, how do you think they're going to feel when they realize that they were sort of a tool for you to get likes or traffic or sales? Just please don't. You can absolutely write books about being a foster parent. You can write memoirs. You can do the keynote speeches. You can do the podcasts. but you cannot make money off of the back of a foster child and their stories. So just no. Number two, we should never, ever, intentionally or unintentionally, frame ourselves as saints or martyrs. And this is one that I will admit I got wrong so often. And I think sometimes I still get it wrong. Sometimes I think I'm like towing the line of being factual and educational and then like maybe accidentally slipping into that martyrdom thing. So sometimes the content that we think could be educational, like talking about the hard work of fostering, the sleepless nights, the expense of it all, the loneliness, the heartbreak, that can end up becoming a tribute to ourselves for being like just so virtuous to make those sacrifices. I don't think we're doing it intentionally most of the time. And I do think that showing the realities of foster parenting is important. It is hard. It does require sacrifice. And anyone who's thinking about becoming a foster parent should know that it's not all puppies and rainbows, and they should know the sacrifice that is required. So there's this very thin line between the factual education of that experience and the here I am, mother martyr, suffering for this poor child. So that's just a tough one that we always have to check ourselves on. So in practical terms, like what could this look like? I think back to a lot of selfies that I would post in sort of the beginning of my foster care career, for lack of a better word. And it would be like, it'd be the middle of the night. It'd be like 4 a.m. I've been up literally all night with a screaming baby. And the caption would say something about like how exhausted I was, how depressed I was, how alone I felt. That was all true. And those are all very common feelings and experiences. And it's all fair to talk about. But it could have been better if I framed it less about like, woe is me, and more about, hey, here's the reality of foster parenting. And then I turned it into an educational moment. And here's how you can support foster parents if you're not ready to be one yourself. Or, but this is nothing compared to what a child in care might experience. Or, but you know what? It is an honor to get to wake up with this baby every hour when someone out there maybe desperately missing this moment and wishing they were the ones to be up in the middle of the night rocking her. Another practical tip, I think, to avoid the martyrdom but maintain the honesty is to keep it short and keep it infrequent. So if you start to notice that all of your posts are about your sacrifices and how hard it is, then maybe it's time to pull back a little on that and put the focus back on the children in care, and foster care in general, and turn that more educational. So keep it short, keep it infrequent, and focus on the more important aspects of foster care to talk about rather than just how hard it is for us. And I think it's also okay that to lean into how hard it is. We all need support, but there are more appropriate places to do that, like foster care support groups, for example, right? That would probably be a better platform to have those kind of like woe is me posts than doing it in a foster care and influencer space where it could be misconstrued into martyrdom. Rule number three, we are not the better option. And we are not saviors. I feel like this is the one that I'm going to get the most hate about. So again, let's just remember how if we feel defensive about it, we're just going to like lean into that for a minute and really reflect before sending me hate mail. Because I think some people, when they hear, hey, foster parents are not the better option, they're like, what do you mean? This child was in foster care because they were neglected and abused. Like, what do you mean? I'm not better than the person that beat them. That is not what we're saying here. So let's take a beat and think about this. So just personal story before I get into this to show that I've been guilty of this. So I'm like cringing so hard when I recall this post, but once very early in my time as a foster parent, I wrote a caption that said, but if I don't save them, who will? Which like, oh God, that is textbook gross saviorism. And I remember at the time, I was trying to make the point of like, be the change you wish to see in the world. Or, you know, like, it's our duty as humans to help another human out. Like, those would have been great captions, or at least better captions. But instead, I like literally turned myself into Jesus Christ. Like, no one will save these children if not for me. So I just a few things to keep in mind about saviorism. It might be saviorism if you think that you and only you can save or heal the child in your care. None of us are good enough to do that. All we can do is support that child, but we cannot save them and we cannot heal them. It might be saviorism if you ignore or minimize a child's connection to their biological family. So again, like biological family is very important. Just period. It might be saviorism if you think that you're better than the child's biological parents. This is the one that hits people hard sometimes. And this still, I really have to think about this one. Although I believe in it, this one is the hardest for me personally. It's so easy, especially if you have just a heartbreaking case of a child who was, you know, really badly physically abused, let's say, to think, well, of course I'm better than them. Like, I didn't beat this child within an inch of their life. Yeah, I'm better than them. But that also discounts the good that can be in that person, how they got to that place in their life where they did that, what happened to them when they were a child, when they were growing up, that might have robbed them of the lessons that they needed to learn to be a better person. Now, don't get me wrong. We are not excusing the parents' behavior in any of this. We are not making excuses for it. We are not saying, well, no big deal. You had it rough. None of that is happening here. We're just saying that we are all equal fuck-ups, essentially. And maybe we have fucked up in very different ways, but none of us are perfect. And we are not inherently better than anyone else, really. But we are not inherently better than the child's parents. And in some ways, the child's parents can be better than us, right? They have connections to perhaps their culture or their background. They can know things about that child that we don't know yet, or we may never know. So just really gut check that. Could be saviorism, as you think your way of parenting is the best way or the only way or the right way to parent. I see this a lot in content. Like, people will post about a child who just got back from a visit, and they're ranting about, mom didn't feed the baby the way she was supposed to. Mom didn't play with the baby the way she was supposed to. And I'm guilty of this too. I would sometimes have posts that have since been deleted, thank God, where I would complain that Jack's parents didn't do things the way I thought they should do things. Everybody's parenting style is different. There is no right or wrong way. And everybody's a bad parent compared to someone else. Like, any parent listening, I could catch you at a time where I would be like, whoa, you made that decision? Like, that was a really shitty parenting move, right? So that can be saviorism. If you're thinking that your way is the best way and the only way, and that is it. And my favorite, it might be saviorism if you completely discount, downplay, or outright don't believe there are any systemic and systematic racial biases and motives in removing children from their bio families. This one you don't see blatantly as often. Like, most people are smart enough not to come right out and just be like, there's no racism in foster care. Although sometimes you will see that in the deep in the comment section, and it just like infuriates me. But I think there are some like dog whistles that you hear, especially with white foster parents when posting about children of color in their care, that it's like, oh man, you have no idea how deep some of this racism and injustice goes that is inherent to the way the foster care system was built. That is a whole other episode, and I have a lot of great books I'd love to recommend on that taught me so much about this. But long story short, like, Black children are removed from their homes far more often than white children, like, regardless of the circumstances. For example, like, Black children have been removed essentially for far less than a white family might be removed for. And white families are given way more benefits of the doubt. They're given way more support. Their intentions are always presumed to be good over a Black family. There's just so much racism and bias in foster care. And if you're going to deny any of that, or if like you're kind of hinting at it or around it, like that's saviorism. And that saviorism is sort of reductionist either or thinking. So, if you're saying, my kids' biological parents made bad choices, and so they are bad, that's reductionist thinking. Yes, they made bad choices. They are not necessarily bad people. There could be good within them. Or, I see this all the time. I'm going to go on a slight tangent here, but I see so many times, someone will post a picture of their foster children. My favorite is when they technically have disguised their faces, but just barely. Like, they'll draw like the thinnest white line over their eyes. And it's like, come on now. Like, you're not actually following the spirit of the law. And they'll say something like, prayers for a good outcome. And it's like, we all know what you want that outcome to be. You want that outcome to be that the kids stay with you. And of course, you know, I don't presume to know the ins and outs of every case. And, you know, we have all heard of cases where children were reunited with family that ended up being dangerous and children were injured or killed because of it. In fact, I fostered a newborn baby who was later reunited with her mother and it resulted in her death. So I am not blind to that reality, but so often those posts are about the good news that they want people to pray for is that the children stay with them. And the bad news is that the children have to have more visits or the children are going to be reunified or that another family member shows up who learns about the children being in care. And that is like classic saviorism in action. You know, and as I said earlier, just because a bio parent made bad choices doesn't mean there's no good in them. And it doesn't examine the causes or the why behind those bad choices, nor does it consider the good that's lost when a child is not with their biological parents. So the saviorism, I think, sometimes can be harder to detect in the posts, but I especially see this in the big influencers, like the ones who have hundreds of thousands of followers and their entire content machine are their children of color in, you know, these professional shots of them like wandering through a prairie, right? And the mom's in like the big floppy hat and the sundress, and there's always a Bible caption there, which that's fine. Like I also believe in Jesus, but usually there's some kind of like slightly, if not overtly, white saviorism undertone or overtone in those posts. So that's one that really feeds into a lot of the content and sort of is the foundation of a lot of the content that I see. Rule number four, children are not accessories. So I just had a great segue into that when I talk about those, especially the bigger influencers whose feed is filled with the professional photos of the children in care. So I think it's great to get professional photos of children in care, both by themselves and with you. Like a child should have their childhood documented so that when they are older, they can see how well loved they were and see how much they were cared about. So that's great. But that doesn't always need to be public, right? A lot of times it's very clear that the child is being used as a like machine, right? You get these cute little brown baby photos of this adorable white Utah mom foster care influencer, and you just watch the likes go up. And that is kind of outright exploitation and clearly using the child as an accessory. And it usually goes hand in hand with making money off the backs of the child too, right? Usually those are the posts that I'm talking about that I see are promoted or have a brand partnership. Like they are getting paid for using that foster child in the photo. Rule number five, children should not be seen in the post, period. This one I have violated big time. I don't know many people who haven't violated this one. So everything I'm about to say, please know I am also directing at myself. And this one is one that I really just kind of more recently within the past year have sort of come down hard on for myself. So technically, you could show a child in foster care on social media, but you had to cover their face. So a lot of influencers would get away with this by doing these like very skinny thin lines over the eyes of the child. Like you can obviously tell who the child is. If you were a relative of the child or knew them somehow, you would be able to recognize this child. I would sometimes put like a big sunglasses graphic over the face or the eyes of the child. And I get it because they're so cute and you want to show people how cute these kids are. And you're like, oh my God, look at this adorable kid. And it's exciting. I get it. I think this is one of those that does often come from a good place. But I have more recently started to think about how devastating that is to the biological family and how devastating that could be to the child when they grow up and they see that. So first of all, to the biological family, I mean, this really hit home when I was following an Instagram account of a mother who her children were taken from her. They were in DCS custody. She admits she made some bad choices. She was able to be reunified, and she is a wonderful parent, at least from what I can tell, following her on social media. And she talks about how one day she was kind of just scrolling through Instagram and she was at her rock bottom and, you know, just like strung out and I think on the verge of like contemplating suicide, like that kind of low. And she saw a photo of her child. And the child's face was kind of barely covered, but she knew it was her child. And, you know, went to this person's profile and just saw all of these photos of the child. And she talks about how in one way it was comforting to see that, like, okay, obviously she's in a place where she's being well taken care of. She's in clean clothes. It looks like she's well fed, right? These look like decent people. But also how, I think she said it, like, it felt like someone kicked her in the stomach because she felt like they were using her child for likes, for attention, for to feel good about themselves. But also it wasn't their child. It isn't their child to share. That was her child. And I think that's something that foster parents, that we often miss when we are talking about our content. I mean, we obviously love these children like they are our own children. And in many ways, it is healthy to refer to them as our own, right? Like, you know, you probably have the same rules for your foster children as you do your biological children, or at least you should for the most part, unless they have special needs or accommodations that may warrant different rules. And, you know, hopefully when you're in public, you don't introduce them as like, well, this is my adopted son, this is my foster son, and this is my biological son, right? So in that regard, it's very helpful that we see them as our kids and we love them like they're our kids, but they are not our kids. The whole point of foster care is that we give them back. And so by taking ownership of them in this way that you are documenting them for the world to see, I think can be very damaging and can also be like very demotivating. Demotivating? Is that a word? Unmotivating? I should know this. I'm a communications major. It can not be very motivating to a biological parent who might see this and think, well, gosh, that looks like they're living a great life. Like they don't even need me, right? So, you know, maybe take those photos for the child to have later, for the biological parent to keep once they're reunited, hopefully if they're reunited, maybe send them privately to your friends and family to share those moments. But that doesn't need to be content and entertainment for public consumption. And as I said, I've definitely gotten this one wrong because I just wasn't thinking of the impact that it had. And I think... well, yeah. Okay, I'll leave it there. I was going to talk about a more specific story of a foster parent, but the point is not to point out any individual who may be guilty of this, because I am also guilty of this. So we're gonna go from a place of grace right now. So, you know, children are not accessories and children should not be seen on social. I think the place where I have personally become comfortable is to show so little of them that it could literally be a stock photo, right? So like if you've got a baby and you show like their adorable chubby toes, if that's literally all you're showing, I don't necessarily feel like that's violating anything, because you wouldn't know whose child that is. That child probably wouldn't be recognized by just a toe. But, you know, it gets so blurry so quickly, even just like taking a photo of the child from the back, like you could still tell if that's your child from the back, right? So it's just, I think it's best to just keep them off and be creative with other ways to represent the idea of you fostering without actually showing their images. And this has been a hard one for me too, because really the past like 9 months or so, we've done a lot of really short-term placement or respite placements. And the kids are always so stinking cute. So the first thing I want to do instinctually is to post a picture on social media and be like, squee, look at how cute they are. And I haven't done that because that's a line I'm holding with myself. So I would just encourage you to do the same as well. I think we're at rule number 6 now, although I have lost count, but I didn't number my rules in my show notes here. So rule number six is that their stories are not our stories to share. And this is again, one that I definitely violated in the beginning. While I never told specific details, I never shared names, I definitely told way too much that it wasn't my child to share their story. And for the biological parents, their story was not mine to share either. So I would just urge you, when you are creating content that talks about your foster parent experience, that you just keep things incredibly general. My gut check is always, hey, let's say that mom and dad, whatever they're struggling with now, let's say that 4 years from now, they completely turn their life around and they are just a model citizen and a model parent. And let's say they stumble upon everything, every piece of content that I've put out there. Would I be proud to share this with them? Or would I be like a little embarrassed and feel like I should kind of apologize and be nervous about their reaction? That's my personal gut check. And even now, it's a little tricky because Jack, of course, is my son, and I do technically have the legal right, at least, to share his story. Although, of course, I understand as parents, we all have different ideas of what we may and may not be comfortable with sharing about our own children, and that's fine. But his biological parents' stories are not mine to share. And so even now when I do share anecdotes or stories or photos, I always ask them first, like, hey, are you okay with me sharing this and getting that permission? And that can be tricky as I kind of move forward and talk about the open adoption. But I think that's just really key, is that they're not our stories to share. It's not anybody else's business. And then obviously just for privacy purposes, we have to keep that all, close to the vest. So I see this a lot in content. Usually this is with the smaller influencers, because I think the larger influencers maybe are more concerned about their privacy, but with sort of the smaller followings, the sort of average Joes, us average Joes in the foster parent space will tend to share a little bit more than we should. And again, that is not our business to share. I also see this a lot in the memoir space or the book space or the keynote space. A lot of the sort of, I don't know, cross content that people have developed, again, just kind of uses stories of people in an exploitative way for their own gain. And we just always have to really gut check. Should I share this? Like, is it helpful for me to share this? Do I have the legal right to share this? Do I have the ethical and moral right to share this? Can I get to this point without sharing this information? I think that one is really key, because most of the time, whatever larger point you are trying to make, you can make that point without violating the privacy of the child or the family, even if you're trying to keep it general. So those are my foster parenting influencer rules. Hopefully I haven't lost too many of you along the way. Hopefully I'm not going to get a bunch of mean comments here. And again, like I said, this isn't to call anybody out. I think, except for the making money off of a foster kid, I've never done that. But with everything else, I have probably violated all of these rules, and luckily have gone back and looked at a lot of that early content and been like, oh my God, what was I thinking? And have since deleted that. So it's okay if you've made those mistakes along the way. It's okay if you're looking at some of your recent posts and thinking, oh, yikes, I didn't think about that. That's okay. Just go ahead and delete them. And now you know better. Or now you can share those insights with other new foster parents who might be thinking of this. We just, we have to try to educate ourselves and try better. Guys, it's to the end of this podcast. I can't come up with words anywhere. Try harder and do better. And for those who are outright just sort of manipulating their followers through using the images of these children, the children's stories, the woe is me, white savior thing, we can call those out. Like, if it is obvious that they know better and they just don't care, like, I'm okay with dropping a comment on their post and being like, yeah, just don't do that, right? But anyway, also curious if there are any other rules he would add, any kind of guidelines that you keep in mind when you're talking about your foster parenting experience. Let me know and I'll share those too. Maybe we have like a part two of lessons that you have learned or rules that you follow. So as always, would love to hear your questions, your comments. Hopefully I can cover all of those in a future episode. You can send me an email to elizabeth.friedland@gmail.com, or you can also follow me on Instagram, where I try not to violate these rules, @efriedland. And as always, thank you guys so much for listening.